It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The state Senate will vote this week on what's been dubbed the bathroom bill. It's an effort by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and his Republican allies to require transgender people to use bathrooms based on the sex on their birth certificates. Senate Bill 6 has sparked a lot of opposition from businesses worried that it might cause national and international events to pull out of Texas, and from LGBT groups. Protests broke out at the Capitol last week. Here's S. David Wynn, a transgender pastor from Fort Worth.
In the beginning, God created humankind in God's image. God created them male and female, so God is transgender.
The bathroom is also at the heart of a battle brewing between the legislature and the state's biggest cities. Brandon Formby writes about that in the Texas Tribune and sat down with KERA's Rick Holter.
Brandon, I guess the fundamental question here is about local control. In this context, what do those words mean?
Well, that definition of what local control has been changing over about the last decade. It used to mean, both political parties agreed to this, that it meant let cities decide as many issues as possible. But that started to shift over the past 10 years, and now there's a school of thought that local control sometimes means the state.
And cities are arguing that the state takes control from the cities.
Right. There are a lot of bills in the legislature this session in which the cities say the state is overstepping its bounds and micromanaging them.
So how is this playing out in issues other than the bathroom bill?
Oh, there's a lot of them. One of them is with ride-hailing apps.
Oh, like Uber or Lyft.
Right. Austin had a contentious election about regulations for ride-hailing companies last year, and Uber and Lyft left. There's now a bill that would make statewide rules that apply to them in all cities. Then you also have a bill about anti-sanctuary cities. There's a bill that would prevent cities from banning short-term home rentals like you find on Airbnb. There's also a bill being debated on Tuesday about limiting the amount of taxes that cities, school districts, and counties could levy.
Now, the legislature is run by Republicans, and most big city mayors in Texas are Democrats. Is this simply a red-blue split?
The partisanship definitely plays a role. I mean, pretty much, especially among mayors, they all agree, that it is kind of that disconnect between parties at the city level and the state level. But not always. Someone who, you know, can point this out better than anyone is Betsy Price, the mayor of Fort Worth. She is a Republican, and of course, Tarrant County is right now the most conservative large urban county in the country. And Mayor Price said that the state sometimes lumps all cities in together and paints them all with one brush when they really shouldn't.
I'm guessing this isn't just happening in Texas.
No, actually, the National League of Cities has been tracking local control and what are called preemption bills across the country for years. And they say that they're seeing, you know, every year they're seeing an increase in the amount of bills filed in state houses that would undo or overrule ordinances at the city level.
Brandon Formby, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Nationalism is clearly on the march. Just look at the Brexit vote last summer and Donald Trump's rise to the White House. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with Richard Huss, president of the Council on Foreign Relations. He argues that globalism is good and that the U.S. should continue to play an important role around the world.
There might be some very poor and weak countries around the world that don't have the equivalent of what we have in Atlanta, the Centers for Disease Control. But as we've learned the hard way, if there's an outbreak of some terrible virus in such a country, it could ultimately kill people here. So we have an incentive to help them develop the means to prevent outbreaks or monitor them or deal with them if and when they occur. This is not really a form of charity, what I'm talking about. It's a form of self-interest, and it's based on the very hard-headed, realistic calculation that what goes on elsewhere can in fact hurt us, or, you know, to use the cliche, the world is not Las Vegas, and what happens places doesn't stay there.
Richard Huss wrote the book World in Disarray, American Foreign Policy and the Crisis of the Old Order. This episode of Think Rears tonight at 10. You can listen to the podcast at think.kera.org. Austin's South by Southwest is historically known as a music showcase, yet the festival's interactive arm is now the biggest draw for tens of thousands of folks from around the world. KERA's Alan Melson has been writing about the conference this weekend on our website, artandseek.org. He talks with Ann Bothwell about the high-tech threads emerging in Austin.
Alan, every year at South by Southwest Interactive, there are recurring themes. What seems to be bubbling up this year?
Well, South by Southwest has been a place where new technologies have made a big splash in past years, including Twitter and 3D printing. And last year was all about virtual and augmented reality. But it seems like things took a little bit more of an abstract turn this year with conversations about artificial intelligence, or as many people like to call it, AI for short.
Why is AI such a big topic this year?
I think it's because the technology is starting to catch up to its potential. There were multiple sessions about machine learning, which is a more complex form of AI that uses algorithms to look at data and then learn from it. This means the computer trains itself to perform a task instead of just following a set of instructions. A simple example is the way that Amazon learns what you like by watching what you click on or buy. So the next level of AI is deep learning, which tries to mimic the way the human brain builds connections through neural networks. Google's been experimenting with this through a division called DeepMind, which is doing everything from learning patterns in healthcare to playing games that simulate conflict between people. The possibilities are pretty huge, but for people already suspicious about what our devices know about us, there are still some big ethical questions that we need to sort out.
You also wrote about efforts to use this machine learning in design. How does that work?
There's this really cool presentation by a researcher at MIT named Pip Mothersill, who's using AI to teach computers how to create designs that better represent how we feel. She made some online tools where you can create forms that are based on emotions and descriptions, and she's working on ways that these can be incorporated into the design of furniture and other household objects. It was really, really, really interesting.
There was another hot topic, this whole smart cities thing. What's with that?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion on that as well. The idea here is that these quote-unquote smart cities create better places to live through careful use of technology and data, and this can help them make improvements in everything from transportation to housing and healthcare. The mayor of Atlanta was there along with other city leaders and spoke at several different panels. They were stressing the need to be more flexible and more nimble. You know, cities do tend to move kind of slowly when it comes to innovation, and what they're suggesting is that cities can work with startups to help speed up positive change.
You have a huge group of folks from the tech industry down there. Did any of the conversation about national politics come up during the conference?
Yeah, it was pretty tough to avoid. There was one session I attended that argued that better urban planning will actually improve how many people are involved in their cities and into civic life. National poll numbers obviously show that we're increasingly polarized, and more people are saying they've lost trust in the government. But these panelists made some pretty compelling arguments that people who actually use parks and other public spaces where they live are much more likely to be involved in their cities and feel like they have a voice in local politics, and maybe even actually like their elected leaders.
Well, that seems like a novel concept these days. Alan, thanks so much for your time and safe travels.
Thanks, Anne.
You can find more of Alan Melson's reporting from the South by Southwest Interactive Conference at artandseek.org. And while you're there, look for Stephen Becker's thoughts on the film part of the festival. And finally, the bracket for the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament is being revealed at this moment. The Final Four will land in Dallas at the end of the month. The team with the best shot to take it all, of course, is Connecticut. The Huskies are the number one seed overall. They've won 107 straight games and 4 consecutive national titles. Baylor is also expected to get a top seed, and if they make the Final Four trek, they only have to drive 90 minutes up I-35. The tournament starts Friday, and the Final Four tips off March 31st at American Airlines Center. Should be mostly clear skies later this evening with a cool low around 39. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 65. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, with a low around 46. It's currently 63 degrees in Dallas, 61 in Fort Worth and Tyler, and 56 in Wichita Falls. At 6:30, this is KERA News.